Accession number 30635, Mr. Doug Bone, Reel 5. Now, we're talking about your time as the tank unit, the demonstration tank unit at Warminster. We talked about some of the personalities. Now, was there anything, I don't know how long you were there for, or whether anything in particular happened while you were there that you recall, you know? I mean, it was, you were sort of feeling your way into a new unit, weren't you?
Yes, I was, yeah. A new squadron, yeah,
new
within
squadron,
the regiment.
Sorry, yeah. You'd been in the other squadron.
That's right.
For a brief time. So, anything you remember from that period as you were sort of settling in?
Apart from the fact that it was a hard, generally hard work, and we had to give the chief instructor, who was an infantryman, full support as regards squadrons of tanks, which he used obviously for demonstration purposes. This went on until August 1950.
So about 3 months.
I was only there about 3 months. It was quite handy because I used to come home quite easily from there to Dummer, from Warminster into Salisbury by train and Salisbury to Basingstoke, which was quite easy. And
weekends.
Mel Howell, who was a great friend of mine, or became great friends, and he was a great cricketer. And one weekend he'd come home here to Dummer with me and play for the village cricket team. And then possibly another weekend I'd go to, he lived in Stroud in Gloucestershire, and I'd go home with him. So we were away quite a lot, which actually is detrimental to a serviceman's career, in my opinion.
In what way? Just talk a bit
more. You never get used to being away from home. There's always that pull, which on reflection is not a good thing.
You'd have been better just breaking with home.
Well, yes, in going home,
not
obviously.
Not full-time, but no, just for, yes, you know, right, for yes. 6 months
you,
or 3 months.
You mustn't go back too often.
Now, anything else happened, or was it you just preparing tanks?
We all were preparing tanks, and obviously there was the ceremonial duties.
Now, tell me about them. What were the
ceremonies? Well, we did for one thing in the main was the fact that we did a parade through Warminster for the King's birthday.
Tell me about that.
Well, that was an absolute, that we balled up four tanks completely, painted them, repainted them and cleaned them, and they were in pristine condition. And they led the column through the centre of Warminster to be with a salute being taken by the mayor at the end of Warminster, and you traverse the gun and dip the gun in salute. Well, somebody didn't bargain for the fact that when you traverse the gun, it did coincide with a lamppost, and the lamppost was knocked over. And we nobody that were there, Slim included, he'll bear that out if you speak to him about it, can remember it. He was
were
there.
You actually there? I mean,
I wasn't on a tank. I followed behind very unofficially in our own recovery vehicle.
Now, that's something. Tell me about the recovery vehicle. I mean, what was it? How
well, it was only
was it a proper tank recovery vehicle?
Oh, no. No, that never went out of barracks. There was a tank recovery vehicle there, which were manned by Remy.
So they'd go out
if a tank broke down on the Salisbury Plain, they would go out and bring it back. We would possibly go out with them and put the track back on if it was that sort of situation.
But what was your tank recovery vehicle? What you called a tank recovery vehicle? Was that just a lorry or what was it?
Well, no. Ours was, yeah, it was just a 15 underweight lorry where there are tools in the back.
And that's just how you got about
to
do a job that needed doing. Anything else about your time? Any other parades or ceremonial or guard duties?
Well, we had to take into guard duties every so often.
So what was guard? Tell me about guard duty.
Well, you just guarded the tank part, that's all, with a sledgehammer handle in your hand, you know. That was pretty low key.
You didn't have a sort of stick man or anything before?
Well, yes, you always had a stick man.
Can you just explain to him what it was?
Well, the stick man actually was the smartest. The guard was consisted of 6, 8, or 10 people, depending on the size of guard that you were doing. And they were inspected by the squadron leader or officer of the day. And he picked the smartest man didn't go on guard.
Did you ever get it?
Oh, yes. Yeah, once or twice.
And how smart would you... I mean, how much of a level of...
Well, it... You had to be good. You had to be pretty smart. Your boots had to be clean, and the back of your buttons had to be clean, and the back of your cap badge had to be clean, you know. But this good soldier never looks behind, they say, but they do.
Anything else about your time there? It wasn't long, 3 months, you know.
It wasn't long, no. It was very enjoyable. It was enjoyable, you know, because you were working all the time and there was always plenty to do.
So what next then? What happened in...
Well, on August Bank Holiday Monday, 1950, we were all suddenly recalled back to Tidworth. The rest of the regiment had moved from Leicester to Tidworth in the meantime.
That's the big Tidworth camp.
That's right, yeah. We were in Multan Barracks in Tidworth.
Multan?
Mm.
Or Multan?
Multan. Multan.
And what was happening there?
Well, we were all called back from Warminster. We left our tanks in Warminster. All the personnel came back. And we were then mobilised to go to Korea.
Now, we were where... in any way that was happening, or was it...
No, not until the day.
And what preparations were made when you got to Tidworth? I mean, how did they get you ready?
Well, for a start, we were inoculated en masse for various bits and pieces and things and bugs.
Now,
and
what impact did the vaccinations have? Because sometimes they can have a bad effect.
Well, we'd all been done in a short, you know, relatively short time before, so it didn't make any difference.
What else? So vaccinations, what else?
Well, we were all given, as it turned out, totally inadequate kit to take with us.
And what kit was it? Was it special tropical kit or you know,
well,
what was it?
It was a mixture of... It was a lot, basically, it was tropical kit. Thrown in amongst it was the old, now famous string vest. And that was our insulation when we got to Korea. I don't think anybody bargained for the fact that how cold it was going to be when we got there. But we had August, September, October to prepare all the tanks. We had a complete regiment of brand new Centurion tanks.
Centurion?
Centurion Mark IIIs.
Now, tell me about that. What did you think of the Centurion Mark III? And if we could talk about it, you know, generally.
Well, it was an excellent vehicle, but the... I don't know what the right word is, really. The trials that had gone on for it were, in our case, totally inadequate. I don't think anybody bargained for the fact that we're going to have a quick war. And the thing that let the Centurion Mark III down was its stabilizing equipment for its gun. It was fitted with a gyro stabilizer, which theoretically was to control the traverse of the gun, of the turret, and the elevation and depression of the gun. In other words, it would follow the contour of the ground. The tank would go like this, but the gun barrel would stay. That was theoretically how it should work. But we had so much trouble with the gyros.
What kind of trouble?
Well, it didn't really affect me because it was an electrician's problem.
But you knew of it. Which gun was it, by the way? How many millimetres?
It was a 20-pounder.
20-pounder.
Yeah.
And any other problems that they had, you know, with being so new? Were you the first unit to get the Centurion 3s?
We were certainly the first unit to use Centurion 3 in anger. Whether it had been delivered to any other regiment or not, I can't be sure. But we were the first to take it into action.
Now, what did you think of it as a tank? I mean, you'd quite like the Comet.
Well, the Centurion was a step up from the Comet.
What was better?
Well, dare I say, the accommodation was better. The stowage for your kit was better. It was a bigger tank. The engine was the same as a Comet.
So you
sort of slightly beefed up to what from what it was, and the gearbox was the same.
So that for you, that's good.
Exactly.
So you already know what you're doing.
We were conversant with the kit, really.
So it's more the poor electrician who had this new stabilizer.
Yeah.
Anything else about it? What about its armour and gun? Was that? I mean, the gun's a step up as well, isn't it?
Oh, the gun was fantastic.
What's good about it?
Well, the muzzle velocity of it was the best there was in the world. Was better at that stage than the German 88, because it was developed really from the 88, or not developed, but ideas were taken from it. And it had the greatest muzzle velocity of any gun in service at the time.
And armour?
Armour was good. They hadn't progressed to what is now called Chobham armour, obviously. But it was good. The suspension was good.
So all round a better tank?
All round a better tank, yeah. One of the things that let it down, when we had 62 Centurions delivered straight from the factory in Leeds to Warminster, and the first thing we did was modify them.
Now, how did you modify them?
Well, we had to fit an extra dynamo to the thing, for a start.
Well, now, why?
Well, it deemed that the there was fitted to it a generator unit, which was a fairly big alternator, plus driven by a Morris side valve 8-horsepower engine, which you had to run all the time you were using the gun or traversing the turret. Which was basically to give power to the stabilizer. Well, they found that you had to run this excessively, so they fitted another generator to the engine to charge the batteries while you were going from A to B. In other words, it saved the little Morris engine.
So it's a dynamo generator thing.
Yeah.
Is that a big job or relatively simple?
Well, no. All the kit arrived for us all to do, and it was relatively simple. But it was something that had to be done to everyone.
Anything else you had to do to them to get them ready, or as ready as you could?
No, not really. Apart from obviously, I had to check all the kit. All the tools, stow it all, put them in the stowage bins, and we welded them up, most of them, so it couldn't be stolen on board ship. And when we got the other end, they were the welds were broken and the Well, you've just fitted your normal padlock then. But... And then we had to load them on transporters.
Now, how'd you do that?
Well, you just
drove them on. Sorry, yeah.
Drove them on. And drained them virtually dry of fuel. Take them to Southampton, take them off the transporter, and drive them on the dockside. And then the stevedores took over from us and drove them, put them on in the tanks, in the hold of the ships. And they were virtually dry of any fuel.
Now, when was that?
Well, that would have been
you'd gone to
late September into the middle of October.
October. Now, so what happened? Did you go on the same boat?
No. The one other thing that we had to do was disconnect all the batteries. The tanks were loaded into the hull of the ship, stacked. Guns were traversed so they could get the maximum amount of stuff into the hold. And then we had to go in and disconnect all the batteries. And as I say, they were virtually dry of fuel for safety reasons. The base of the hold of the ship was filled with tanks.
Was it a purpose-built tank transporter, or was it just a...
No, the only problem was that the ships that they had to use to do this had to be capable of lifting 50 ton with their own derrick. There was no derricks heavy enough in Pusan docks to lift a Centurion at that stage.
Do you know the name of the transporter?
One ship that sticks in my mind is the Banalbanac. How you spell it, I don't know. But she was taken, built to ship railway locomotives from the UK to South America.
And hence she had the stuff to lift.
And she had the derricks to lift the tanks off. Once the tanks were in the hold, the rest of it was filled up with bales of blankets and soft stores.
Now, what did you go on?
Everything had gone, we'd loaded everything, lorries, tanks. We left Southampton on the Empire Fowey.
Now, when was that? Is that also October, or...?
It would have been, yes, the middle of October.
Now, what were conditions like on the Empire Fowey?
But it was, bearing in mind that it was a troop ship, purely and simply a troop ship. It was one of Hitler's strength through joy ships, and she only weighed about 19,000 ton. And there was close on 1,000 of us, and 1,000 Northumberland Fusiliers, and she was full. But it... We coped.
Now, what was your mess deck like, or the where you were? What was it like to live on?
It was quite sociable. You know, it was clean.
Were you in hammocks or on?
You were going to ask me this question. I was just trying to think. I can't remember whether we were in. Some were in hammocks and some were in cots.
And how crowded was the mess deck? You know.
Well, it was pretty crowded. There was enough men on there.
And what about the food?
The food was good, was reasonable. And we all had to do our own cookhouse fatigues in our turn.
So it wasn't too bad. I mean, you know, from the sound of it, you know, it's just cramped, a bit cramped. But
that's right.
Nothing too bad.
And typical troop ship, it had its own RSM on board. They had their own disciplinarians, which all troop ships had, and on the front of the ship, bearing in mind a lot of our staff or a lot of our troops in this regiment were reservists that had been called back. And they all arrived whilst we were at Tidworth.
Well, tell me about the reservists. How did they feel about being called back? Because not everyone wants to come back. You know what?
Yeah, I do.
What was their mood? What were they like?
Well, a lot of them were. Well, they were very anti-recall and very belligerent. A lot of them. But some of the younger ones that hadn't been out of the army for long. They were all regulars, had been regular soldiers, and they knew really that they were on the reserve and were liable to be called back, but nobody ever expects to be.
Did they knuckle to it, or did they stay belligerent?
The majority of them that we had did knuckle down.
Did it take long?
No, not really. Those that were in tank crews obviously had to go off on extensive courses to get retrained for Centurion. They'd never even seen a Centurion. We had at least seen one.
So basically, it was a bit of a kerfuffle when they arrived, but after that they settled in with
oh, yeah, reason. Yeah. There was a lot of arguments, and there was a lot of, not at our level, but you know, I shouldn't be here, and I had my own business, and it's now gone down the drain, and this sort of thing. But by and large, they were reasonable.
Now, when you set off, from Southampton. Any trouble with seasickness, either you or on board?
Well, I think the majority of us. I certainly was seasick in the Bay of Biscay, but then when we rounded Gibraltar and into the Med, we got over it. We got our sea legs.
How bad was the seasickness? Was it?
Well, it's 60 years ago.
You don't remember too?
Not really.
Was there a lot of it aboard ship?
Well, I think everybody had their bout of seasickness.
Now, what about the route? What do you remember about the trip? Because it's your first big time.
That's right.
Away,
it was.
Out of the country. What do you remember of that trip through the Med?
Well, we stopped at Port Said going out. And
did you get ashore?
We got ashore, and somebody suddenly realised that all these soldiers were walking about in deck shoes and not wearing their boots. So our colonel said, right, everybody must put their boots on, we'll go ashore, and we marched up the desert for 10 mile and back. And from then on, we wore our ammo boots all the time on board ship. And he said, sod the decks, you know.
And what did you... So you didn't get out and about in Portsmouth?
Oh, no. We then we stopped at Aden. We got grounded in the Suez Canal.
What do you remember that?
What do I remember by it? Well, you could walk to the sharp end of the ship and look over, and all you could see was sand. You could go to the other end, and all you could see was sand. We were across the canal, and we're right opposite the British Military Hospital. The name of the place escapes me now, but all the nurses came to the shore and cheered us on and what have you. I can remember that quite vividly. But
how did you get out of it? I mean,
well, it was, this ship was apparently button steered, and the pilot that had come on at Port Said had never ever used or been on board a button steered ship, and the master of the ship got us out of trouble, and we eventually got ourselves in the right direction and carried on to Aden.
Anything else about the trip? Did you get ashore at Aden? Or
well, we got ashore at Aden.
What was that like?
Well, we weren't in Aden for many hours, but it was, you know, it was another trip abroad, wasn't it?
Then where?
It was very, very hot, and most of us slept on board deck then. We then went to and stopped at Colombo. A And that's when you all the little Indians come along in their bumboats and sell you carved elephants and what have you. Mine are on the stairs. And
we were enjoying all these new foreign experiences.
Yes, it was an adventure, wasn't it? We then went on direct then to from Colombo. I can't think whether we... We went from Colombo direct to Pusan through the China Sea, where we encountered a tornado.
Now, what was that like?
Which threw this little ship about like a cork. Fortunately, well, certainly from my point of view, I'd got my sea legs and I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was good, you know, you stand on there and that thing was going all that. But that was all right. That was good.
It didn't damage the ship at all?
No, no.
Just threw it about?
Yeah.
And then what about, did you get there a reception when you got to Pusan? I mean, what happened when you got there? What was your first impressions?
How cold it was. Into November. And we were met by the American Army in their lorries, and they transported us to the disused prisoner of war camp, Japanese prisoner of war camp, just outside of Pusan, where we stayed. Bearing in mind that we had overtaken the ships that were taking our tanks, and we got there long before ever the tanks did. And we had absolutely nothing to do. And
how cold was it then, or was it?
Well, then it was cold, but it wasn't that cold. It was a cold. It was a good cold British winter. The tanks arrived.
How long were you there for?
We were there for 2 or 3 weeks, from memory.
And did you have to help unload them?
We had then to go back down to the docks as soon as the ships arrived and do in reverse what we did when we loaded them in Southampton. Connect all the batteries up. The tanks were lifted out of the hold onto the dock side. We filled them up and put petrol in them and drove them away. And then, of course, we had to load them up with ammunition when we got them back to the regiment where we were staying.
Now, would you do that, or that other people?
Well, the tank crew would do that.
So you're at this transit, well, expat transit camp, basically.
Yeah.
And how long do you stay there for?
I think the tanks arrived very haphazardly. You'd get one ship in and then you'd wait 3 or 4 days before you got another one in. The period of time that I'm using was post either very short or very long. My memory's gone from that, the length of time now.
Anything happen or anything you remember from that period?
Well, you'd get on one tank, on one shipload of tanks, you get some from each squadron. So you never got one squadron, they weren't all put on one ship. There would be some from A squadron, some from B squadron, some from C squadron, some from HQ. So consequently, you had some of each. And at that stage, it looked as if the war would have been over by the Christmas of 1950. MacArthur had taken the American army virtually onto the Yellow River, the Chinese border. So our colonel said, well, we haven't come all this way not to get a medal. So we formed a composite squadron. There was two tanks from each each squadron, or two or three, and put onto flat cars,